Hey everyone, I'm Eric Mueller and welcome back to the Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. I have a question for you. Do you have any student loans? If your answer is yes, what is your repayment strategy? Now, I was ready to drop this episode right as federal student loan repayments were due to resume, but we just got some great news last week that that loan pause is going to be extended through the rest of 2022 and that most borrowers will have at least $10,000 forgiven on their debt. Still, it is incredibly important to have a financial plan in place when these repayments eventually do resume. Enter Tim Ulbrich, the co-founder and CEO of Your Financial Pharmacist. Founded in 2015, Your Financial Pharmacist is on a mission to help their community of over 13,000 pharmacists achieve financial freedom. They do this through virtual comprehensive financial planning services, as well as three weekly podcasts, several books, and numerous online resources. I strongly suggest that you check out the calculators on the website. Tim Ulbrich received his Doctor of Pharmacy degree from Ohio Northern University, and then he went on to complete a postgraduate residency at The Ohio State University. Currently, he's the host of the Your Financial Pharmacist podcast, which has more than 1 million downloads, and he's the co-author of a book called The Seven-Figure Pharmacist, which has more than 5,000 copies sold. Additionally, Tim has presented to over 200 pharmacy associations, colleges, and groups on various personal finance topics. These topics include debt management, investing, retirement planning, and financial well-being. Tim is here today to help you create a plan for your student loan repayment, avoid costly mistakes, and achieve financial freedom. Listen for the biggest mistake that most people make with their student loans and hear whether paying off loans in a lump sum is a good idea. Let's head on over to the interview. All right, welcome back to the Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. Today, I'm happy to introduce Tim Ulbrich, the co-founder and CEO of Your Financial Pharmacist. Tim, welcome to the show.
Eric, grateful to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. So, Tim, walk us through your entrepreneurial journey. Like, when did you know that you wanted to become an entrepreneur? I know that Your Financial Pharmacist was started in 2015, but did you think about entrepreneurship before that, or how did that story play out?
Yeah, journey is probably a really good word and a descriptor. You know, I've always had the entrepreneurial itch, the bug. I grew up in small business. My grandfather started a nursery farm where I grew up in Buffalo, New York. My father took that business over, started a couple other businesses of his own. He actually still to this day teaches other business owners and consults and works with many folks to really advise and help small businesses. And so I've always been around it. And I think it just took some time for that intersection of my pharmacy journey and entrepreneurship to come together. So I graduated from Ohio Northern University College of Pharmacy in 2008. That was a direct entry 06 program out of high school. True story. I was graduating from high school, told the guidance counselor, hey, I love science. I love math. Help me out. What should I do? Parents told me I need to go to college. Was a pretty good student. She said, hey, have you thought about pharmacy? Looked up pharmacy, looked like good job opportunities that were there, good compensation and pay. And so that was a journey that I went on and really worked hard throughout that journey. Decided to do residency training the year after pharmacy, felt like the right thing to do, but kind of had this really interesting aha moment during residency. I was doing a community care ambulatory care residency in 2008, 2009, a lot of direct patient care, but I also had a heavy teaching component. And I realized, like, I don't know if this whole patient care thing is for me. And that's a hard truth to swallow and to really process when you think about, wow, I just invested a whole lot of time and a whole lot of money. But I fell in love with this teaching aspect and realized, wait a minute, there's other things to do with this pharmacy degree that I can continue to further, obviously, the path that I've been on. So went down a path of academia, ironically, kind of found myself in an academic entrepreneurship role, started a business at a university that I worked at, kind of progressed in a few different academic roles. And then it was 2015 when my wife, Jess, and I finished our journey of paying off way too much student loan debt that I saw an opportunity to really, in the profession of pharmacy, really bring this topic of personal finance to light and to speak to it from a pharmacist to pharmacist perspective. And so I reached out to 100 of my closest friends and said, hey, I'm thinking about starting this blog around personal finance. What do you think? Would you be interested? That became the start of my email list. You know, thankfully they said yes. And really the rest is history from there. That led to some speaking events and some book opportunities and some podcasts. And eventually we would really flush that out as a business over the past 5 years. And so as I now look backwards, Eric, I think I see that, you know, that entrepreneurial interest was always there. I was kind of spinning my wheels with where do I go with this, and really saw that opportunity through my personal experience, but also to connect that with the profession that I certainly love as well.
Yeah. And Tim, so have you found that looking back, there's something you wish you would have known when you started that company? Like, is there any advice you'd give to someone who wants to pursue that kind of founding of a new idea or bringing a new business into light?
Yeah, you know, there's a few things that really jump out when you ask that question. You know, I think that one big gap that I had that has been a huge learning curve has been around sales and the mindset around sales. And, you know, I think for many healthcare professionals, probably sales isn't something that we're thinking about. Maybe it even has a negative connotation or, you know, leaves kind of that icky feeling in our mouth. But I've really come to appreciate the importance of authentic selling. And what I mean by that is I really so firmly believe in the mission of who we are and what we do at Your Financial Pharmacist to help pharmacists achieve financial freedom. And I know what comes from that freedom, that I now have an appreciation and a mindset that, hey, it's my job to really sell who we are and what we do to lead them towards this path that I know our services can provide them the outcome that it has for many, many other pharmacists across the country. And that was a mindset shift. It took time. It took a lot of training. It wasn't just sales training, right? There's a lot of psychology that's been involved there too, and a lot of maturity and I think development. But that one really stands out. You know, another one I would say that stands out is I think getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I know that sounds, you know, cliche, but really getting comfortable with, hey, it's not always going to be perfect, that the stars aren't going to align. Sometimes you just got to take a step forward. You jump in the deep end, you figure it out. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, you kind of fail forward, you pivot, you learn from that, you grow. And I think when you really begin to have the confidence to do that, that's when you really start to see some of the exponential growth that can happen, not only in your business, but also in your own personal journey. And Eric, that's been something that has been so rewarding for me most recently over the past year as I made the full-time transition into business, is as I continue to challenge myself in areas of the business where I need to really grow as the person leading the company, I'm finding that it's a very welcome but unexpected benefit of how I see myself personally growing as a father, as a husband, in terms of who I want to be and my personal development growth as well. So there's a lot, I would say, that falls into that category, but I think sales, you know, the mindset around that specifically, and then also that point of really getting comfortable with kind of jumping in and figuring it out. And many times that means that, you know, not everything is figured out in advance.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, based on what you had just said, I was going to ask about your family life. And if you've noticed transitioning full-time into a business like this and not, you know, maybe working for somebody else, do you feel like you have more time or less time? How has it affected your family life?
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting question, because when I was started YFP in 2015, it really started as a hot hobby, evolved to a side hustle, and then I would say really got to the point probably around 2019 that it really felt like, wow, this really demands my full-time energy and effort. And that came at a point where I merged with business entities with my now partner, Tim Baker, to really add the planning component. And then we started growing our team. And Eric, at that point, I had this feeling of like, wait a minute, it's not just about us. We've got employees. We've grown now to a team of 13 individuals. And that really brought this feeling of like, this business and what we're trying to accomplish needs more of my time and energy and effort. And so for the last 2 years before I made that full-time transition, I genuinely felt like I was working three full-time jobs. That was full-time in academia at Ohio State, full-time in the business, and full-time as a father of four boys and a husband. And so at this moment, I can honestly say, as I made that transition a year ago, it does feel like I have more time. It does feel like I have more balance. But I think part of that is because, you know, time was really scarce because of the two full-time roles and obviously a young family at the time as well. But that has been you know, such a fun transformation. I'll say, even though the hours itself, I feel like I have more time, there's a different mental strain that can come when, you know, loved my work at Ohio State in previous academic roles, but I could walk away, go home. And at the end of the day, like, the buck didn't necessarily just stop with me, right? When it comes to the business, I've really had to work hard and implement daily routines and habits and other things to really make sure that, okay, if I'm going to wrap up at 5 or 6, whatever the time is, I'm going to shut it off mentally so I can be fully present and engaged with my boys. So that's been a challenge. That's been an evolution. I still got a lot of work to do, but that's been something I've noticed that has certainly been different.
Right. Yeah. I think that's certainly something, maybe some of you listening can resonate with that too. You know, time blocking or trying to block off sections of time on my calendar. Like, that's something I'm certainly trying to do better, but it's challenging. You know, you get distracted and I think that piece on habits and being disciplined and having that, you know, kind of ingraining it in your daily routine, I think that really personally, or that perfectly segues into personal finance. So, I mean, like, mm-hmm. you need to have like healthy habits and spending and saving and investing. Would you recommend that a person who wants to be more fiscally responsible, should they try to make more money or should they try to save more money if they could only pick one?
Oh, you know, I was going to say yes and yes, right? You know, I make more money, save more money. You know, I think that, you know, mathematically speaking, you know, we're obviously going to see if someone's putting away money and they're investing it the right way, we're going to see significant compound growth in that money over the course of time. I'm going to choose make money for the reason that I'm assuming that someone who is going to take that step of, and that journey of making more money is also going to be fiscally responsible and put that money to work. So I'm going to kind of dodge your question a little bit.
Yeah.
But the reason why I say make your money is, I think for many healthcare professionals, I'm going to pick on pharmacists here for a moment, but I think this broadens out beyond just pharmacy, beyond other healthcare professionals even. We tend to put a lot of artificial ceilings in our mind. And I think that comes in part from our training, that comes from kind of industry norms and averages and salaries and other things. And I think it's when you start to break through those by making additional income, by, you know, investing in real estate, by starting a business, by doing these other things, you start to realize, like, whoa, there's a whole other world out there. And let me be clear, it's not just about being rich in terms of dollars, but it's about, you know, how can we build a wealthy life? And money at the end of the day is a tool. And so, you know, if we have the right habits, the right mindset, and we are able to earn additional income, you know, that gives us an opportunity to get freedom, potentially, of schedule and time. It gives us an opportunity to be in a position to generously give. It obviously affords us other flexibilities, freedoms, and pleasures. But I think that making money, if I had to choose one path, when folks realize, like, wait a minute, I can create something and people are willing to pay for something that I've created that they now value, that opens up a whole new level of mindset that I think doesn't necessarily come just from saving.
Yeah, I think that's, like, really the piece of the puzzle that I know that I'm still trying to figure out as far as, you know, finding that niche, finding that needed solution. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs and pre-entrepreneurs are feeling that way. Was there anything that you can, you know, advise to them that you noticed during your own journey when you had that aha moment when you saw finance and pharmacy needed, you know, that solution? Was it a conscious thought process where you sat down and just thought about, you know, how to create something, or was it just something that kind of came to you?
You know, it's my first response would be, like, pay attention to your intuition and pay attention to what you're hearing from other people. So, you know, 2015, summer 2015, I can remember vividly, I was traveling to a pharmacy convention in Maryland over the summer. And on the plane, I read the book Start by John Acuff. And prior to this moment, I had the thought and idea of, okay, I'm getting towards the end of the debt repayment journey. I love this topic of personal finance. It feels like there's a gap here out in the market. I don't really see anything. I did some, you know, pretty basic market research. So I had these ideas swirling in my mind, but I couldn't really fully flesh out the vision. I didn't know, is there really interest? Is this a topic that people want to hear about? It? Who am I, right? I'm not a financial planner, expert, whatever that means anyways. And so I had all these doubts begin to creep in. And by the way, like, where do I even begin? And it was that book that really propelled me to say, as he argues in that book, like, you just start, right? You've got all these different ideas, all these different visions, all these different reasons to not do it. But what is the one next step that you can move forward, that even if the whole thing falls apart, like we're seeing if there's other doors that might open up after that. And Eric, for me, that was the step I mentioned of once I decided, okay, I'm going to start writing on this topic and I'm going to start with my own journey, because that's the easiest thing to talk about. I read a blog post about building an email list, and the guy who wrote the post, his recommendation was like, hey, the way you start an email list is you message 100 of your closest friends, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, you know, Twitter, text message, whatever, like ask them, are they interested in receiving your blog, right? And that became the momentum of that email list of the first 100. We've now got a community of over 13,000 pharmacists across the country. But if it wasn't for that first step, there's no way the confidence is there to move beyond that. So, you know, yes, it kind of happened naturally, but there was some nudges, I would say, that were there along the way. And I always had this feeling like I generally come home with business ideas, I would say 2 or 3 probably a week, that I'll brain dump to my wife, Jess. And the one barometer that I use to really say, should I pursue this further, is I give it the 24-hour test. Am I still thinking about 24 hours later? And then is it something that is nagging me that will not kind of leave, you know, my mind, that I continue to think about, wonder, what if? And this was certainly the case with this specific idea that I felt like, hey, I've really got to pursue this forward. And it was that book in particular that really nudged me to take that first step.
I love that. I think the intuition piece, I think everybody can just kind of feel that, you know, as you're telling that story, it's like, what is that thing that comes to your mind that nags at you, that you really kind of have, that you want to pursue in the back of your mind?
Yeah.
And it also makes me think, like, why do people not jump in and take those action steps? You know, if you just try to improve and get just like 1 inch closer to your goal every day, eventually you're going to start making progress. But it seems like taking action people are kind of frozen.
Yeah, they really are. And I think there are a variety of reasons. You know, I think we see from many folks that finances can be a reason, right? They feel paralyzed because of their financial plan. They feel like, you know, maybe they're not in a position to take, you know, some risk, or it's just another thing. It could be, you know, busy schedules and work life. But to be frank, Eric, I think at the end of the day, for most folks, if they're honest with themselves and they look in the mirror, it comes down to a fear of failure. I really believe that. And I think when you put yourself out there, when you say, I'm going to start this thing, whatever that thing is, and I'm going to charge for it, and people may or may not pay for it, like, that is unknown territory. So when I'm in an academic role and I'm making, you know, whatever, $150,000, $160,000, I've got great benefits, I've got, you know, the whole shebang, like, that is safe. That is safe, and it's known, or it's at least perceived to be safe, you know, in our mind. And the other is unknown. The other is, well, what are people going to think about me? And you've got to really start to face some of those more difficult questions. And I think, you know, for many folks, there certainly can be other reasons, but I think that fear of failure is certainly a big one.
Yeah. I think that it certainly resonates with me too. And, you know, you put yourself out there, you want to be likable, and you want your idea, your baby, right, so to speak, to thrive. And it gets me thinking, you know, a topic that's on a lot of my guests' mind and a lot of the audience members' mind is real estate. Mm. And now your company has two podcasts. You have the Your Financial Pharmacist podcast, which you are the host of. And then you have a real estate investing podcast. And I want to ask you, Tim, like, what do you think the first actionable step to starting a real estate portfolio is? And maybe why is it that it's so hard to take that first step, especially for people that have so much loan debt?
Yeah, you know, I think the first tangible step in my mind for folks that are interested in real estate as a potential investing option, certainly one among many others, is to really understand the spectrum of options that are out there. You know, there are very passive and there are very active options that are out there, right? You know, as passive as you have a REIT, a real estate investment trust, and a portfolio, as active as, you know, hands-on, you're flipping properties, you're doing all that work yourself, you're managing them, and then everything in between. And there's a lot of different options, you know, ranging from, I just gave those two extremes. You know, there's certainly opportunities where you can get involved in purchasing, you know, long-term rental properties, but you have other people managing them. You have good systems involved, so you can really minimize your time and effort to scale that if you want. There's a short-term rental market, you know, and then there's other passive investing options. You know, you could be a hard money lender if you want to essentially be the bank for other people and so forth. So I think before anyone jumps in, you know, really being honest with themselves about the risk tolerance, really being honest with themselves about, like, how much do I want to do this versus am I feeling like the pressure of other people are doing this? You know, it's not for everyone. I really don't believe it is. even with the myriad of options that are out there. And I've talked with many pharmacists that I think sometimes they like the idea of it, or a colleague or coworker is doing it. But when they honestly look at their own financial goals and their plan, you know, their risk tolerance and other factors, maybe it's not for them. And that's okay. There's lots of different options that are out there. So I would say first step is really evaluating all the options that are out there. And then I think to the second question, you know, why often do people not get started? I think it goes back to some of that fear, but also, you know, sometimes folks might not have a strong personal foundation in place. So, you know, whether it's, you know, massive amounts of student loan debt, whether it's credit card debt, whether they feel like, hey, I'm having to overpurchase on a home because the market's in fuego right now. You know, maybe I don't have a really good emergency fund in place. I feel like I'm behind on investing. These are the things that we don't want to enter, you know, real estate investing, in my opinion, not feeling like we have a strong personal financial foundation in place. Just like a business, right? If we're going to pursue a business, we want to do it with the confidence, knowing that we can pursue that we've already done the hard work to build a strong personal foundation. And so those are my initial thoughts, but we see healthcare professionals, pharmacy specifically, obviously is our niche, really interested in real estate investing. I think because of, you know, in part the idea that, hey, wait a minute, like there's an opportunity to earn additional income outside of, you know, traditional investment accounts, 401ks, IRAs, HSAs, et cetera. And perhaps I can get access to that money before the age of 59 and a half, right? That traditional age where you can pull your money from those other accounts without penalty. And so, you know, folks that say, hey, maybe I'm on that financial independence retire early pathway, I think it's an attractive option. Or maybe I eventually want to work part-time or have the option to do that. And then I think the other piece that is intriguing and I see come out for healthcare professionals in real estate is that it tends to bring some creative aspect, you know, back to the financial plan. You know, we can put $20,000 in a 401k, but that's a pretty passive process, right? If I'm more actively involved in real estate, and that's something I enjoy and I have the risk tolerance for, you know, I think many folks see that as a financial opportunity, but also as a hobby and somewhat of a creative outlet.
Hearing you say that, I really think like the elephant in the room for many people is that student loan piece.
Yeah.
So there might be some listening, you might have loans from undergrad. You know, if you're in the similar boat as myself, you may have some professional school loans, graduate school loans. Tim, how are like student loans best approached in both these cases? Like one with undergrad and one with maybe both undergrad and professional with graduate. Is there a difference in the strategy or what would you recommend for, you know, getting those loans under control?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, we talk with pharmacists every day, every week that have, you know, many of them are north of $200,000 student loan debt. So, you know, in our profession, it's about $170,000 on average. Obviously, other healthcare professionals might be a little bit higher or lower. You know, what we see, I just did a webinar with a group this afternoon, and I asked them, hey, what's your top financial concern? What's the number one thing you're thinking about right now? And 66%, two-thirds said student loans. And I think what's interesting about that is we need to remember that we've been on this pause of payments for federal loans for now over 2 years, right? So back exactly. To the beginning of the pandemic, March of 2020, you know, the CARES Act gave us a forbearance, a pause on interest, a pause on payments that was extended by the Trump administration, again, by the Biden administration. And here we are set to expire end of August, although we're awaiting news to see if that's going to be, you know, extended further. So I think people are feeling that pressure. We have seen three graduating classes that have never made a student loan payment. And so I think folks are feeling that pressure of like, wait a minute, I got big student loan payments. It's a high inflationary time period. Home prices are crazy. And I've got all these other goals that I'm working on. So I give that background, Eric, because this is the biggest mistake we see folks make in terms of not choosing a loan repayment strategy intentionally. And what I mean by that is that there are a lot of different ways to tackle your loans. And this is not something we want to wander into without thinking of all the options. So there are tuition reimbursement programs out there, you know, for folks that work for whether it's military positions or some government agencies. There's forgiveness options, and then there's non-forgiveness options, which means you're going to pay them off either in the federal system or move them to the private system. And what we see is a lot of people that could be pursuing something like loan forgiveness, and they're not because some of the misperceptions that are out there. And the reason why that's important is because for folks that do have that forgiveness pathway forward, specifically the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, because of how you can really optimize the strategy of that, it can allow you to accelerate your other financial goals, like investing, traditional or real estate. Because in that situation, what we're trying to do is really minimize the amount we pay out of pocket and maximize the amount that is forgiven and ideally forgiven tax-free. So this decision of, you know, does somebody else pay it through forgiveness? Do I pay it myself? Is it federal? Is it private? You know, literally can easily be the difference of tens of thousands and sometimes $100,000 or more, depending on which option someone pursues. So my biggest advice for folks would be use this time period while we're still in this forbearance to really understand all of the options, the complexities. Unfortunately, the system is more complicated than it needs to be, but that's the cards we've been dealt. And use this downtime to really optimize the strategy so that we can hit the ground running once that forbearance period is ultimately going to end at some point in time.
Right. So the intentional thought process behind that plan, and that's probably going to be an individual decision. I mean,
that's right.
It's not going to be the same one box, you know, fits every person's situation. So I think that's really, really helpful, especially for those of you that are getting ready to pay, you know, maybe north of $200,000 back. You got to think about what is the best for your financial success going forward. And I think that your financial pharmacist really could possibly provide you that solution. So, I mean, Tim, how would someone reach out to you if they wanted to start that process with you to have your help on that?
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. They can find more information at yourfinancialpharmacist.com. From there, we've got lots of different resources, connection to our planning services and our team that does student loan work as well. So from the main website. And Eric, let me give one tangible example of that. If someone has, let's say, $200,000 of student loan debt, under the standard 10-year repayment, they're going to be paying about $2,000 a month for 10 years, give or take $100 or so, to get that debt paid off. If instead, depending on somebody's income and tax situation, other things, if instead they pursue a public service loan forgiveness route, that monthly payment might be well below $1,000, depending on their income and other factors. And so out-of-pocket cash flow, right, matters when we talk about investing, when we talk about real estate, when we talk about other types of goals that we want to achieve. So sure, we want to pay what we have to pay, but if there's options to have certain amounts that are forgiven, we want to be considering that stuff as well. So time well spent to really invest and understand the loan repayment options that are out there.
Right. And one last question, Tim, before we switch gears here.
Yeah.
I want to ask, if you had, like, let's say a person is $215,000 in debt, 215. If they had that amount of money in cash right now, would you advise them to lump pay that off or not?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to give a stock answer and then I'll dig a little bit deeper. So it really does depend on, you know, what's the repayment options available. So my first question would be is, do they work for an employer where they could get their loans forgiven? That's going to impact, you know, my decision. What's their interest rates on their loans? Are they private? Are they federal? How do they feel about the debt? All of those things. Are they behind on saving for the future? What other goals are they trying to achieve? All of those things are going to lead me down to the decision of, you know, do we pay this off or do perhaps we look at another situation? Now, to give you the answer maybe you really want without knowing all those things is that I'm probably going to hold on to the cash if I can. And the reason is that number one, we're in this time period of the administrative forbearance. Number two, we're in a high inflationary period. Number three, the market's low. In my opinion, a great time to be looking at buying into the market, not investment advice, but just something to be thinking about. And so I think this is a time specifically where cash is king. And so unless someone's telling me, hey, I'm anxious about the debt. I'm not pursuing forgiveness. I really just want this, you know, gone. And so I can move on with other goals. Maybe there's an argument to be made. But assuming we can be opportunistic with that 215, I think the math would show it's probably going to win in the end.
Yeah, I was thinking that was probably how you were going to go with that answer. Because that's at least where my mind went. So I'm glad to hear that the financial pharmacist agrees with my thought process there. But yeah, it's kind of like the metaphor of if you bought a $10 million house, you might actually be more, you know, it might be more of a fiscally responsible decision, maybe to not buy the house, but if you did do that, to finance it rather than pay cash, even if you had that much cash, you know, because what is the opportunity cost of that purchase, right?
Yeah,
so I
absolutely.
Think that's a really important, yeah.
I think the assumption there we're making, which is a good one, but folks need to consider, is that people are being opportunistic with the difference, right? And,
right.
And so, you know, you look at the example of a home, you know, if we finance it versus we give up the cash, that assumes we're taking that cash and then we're putting it to work so it can grow and do its thing over time.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's great, Tim. Thank you so much for the help on that. And hopefully people feel a little bit better about their loan situation after listening to that. And if not, well, maybe it'll get deferred for a little bit longer.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So switching gears here, Tim, I have a couple questions for you, kind of more focused on the success piece in general. So really like the goal of the podcast, really explore what keeps successful people driven. What is your personal definition of the term success?
Yeah, when I think about success, I come back to, you know, what is the why of what I'm doing? And, you know, I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek's work, you know, start with why, find your why. And for me, specifically as it relates to the business and your financial pharmacist, it's really helping people be in a position of financial wellness and strength so that they can live the best version of their personal and professional lives. And what do I mean by that? Well, I know from personal experience that when somebody is financially well, when they're financially confident, when they're financially healthy, that impacts every area of their life. That impacts the relationships. That impacts, you know, the stress that may or may not be there inside of the household. That impacts the confidence in which they can approach their job. That impacts their confidence in perhaps pursuing other opportunities, whether that's a business or an idea or a passion or hobby or something they always wanted to do. And really the financial piece and that foundation can be transformative. So for me, in terms of success in the business, it's creating an avenue. It's creating a community that really is leaving a dent in our profession in terms of transforming the financial wellness of our profession so that those individuals can live the best personal and professional lives that they want to and can.
Yeah, it's a very admirable goal. I think what you're doing for people that are in my situation, like pharmacists that owe some money and you know, are maybe not certain about what to do in the future. I'm sure some of you listening feel that way financially and it feels a little bit scary. So I appreciate that. And Tim, like taking it just a bit further,
yeah,
and you maybe have an answer similar to what you just shared, but what would be like the single driving force if you could narrow it down to like one force mm-hmm. that keeps your inner clock ticking towards that success? So it could be your family. It could be, you know, the fact that you really just need to provide value to these pharmacists. What is that for you?
Yeah, for me, it's my four boys. It really is. So, you know, one of the greatest joys in my life has been the opportunity to raise my four boys. My oldest will be 11 here soon. My youngest is three. And just to see them observing, it's been a really fun journey for my wife, Jess, and I. And so my wife homeschools our four boys. And so, you know, it's constantly a point of conversation that, you know, sometimes they're sitting there, sometimes they're probably absorbing unconsciously. And I'm starting to really see the fruit of that. And my older boy specifically, you know, asking questions, you know, coming up with ideas or what about this or what about that? And we're actually getting ready to launch a t-shirt business here soon as a family, in part because of this journey. Not because I necessarily think it's going to be, you know, a seven-figure type of business, but because of the value of what it can mean for us as a family going through that journey together and also the opportunity to be able to teach them about business or entrepreneurship, whether they pursue their own business or not. I think those are life skills that are so valuable. And so I know I've got four boys that are watching, you know, closely. And I really want to role model not only entrepreneurship, but more deeply, you know, what does it really mean to pursue the best version of who you are, again, personally and professionally? That's something I believe so deeply that, you know, we're on this journey and on this path of constant growth and evolution that never, never ends. And I want them to see the voracious hunger to learn. I want them to see that, you know, there's always an opportunity to improve. There's always an opportunity to learn. Sometimes that's going to mean failure. Sometimes that's going to mean success. But they have a front row seat to that. And that really is a huge drive and motivation for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I would bet a lot of people listening can feel that as well. Family or friends, you know, loved ones that, you know, really are depending on them and you're setting a role model example for them. And even if you're not, you know, married, don't have a family, mm-hmm. if you are walking down the street, you could be a role model for someone that is watching you. You never know who is watching what you're doing. So I think that kind of motivates me a little bit. Maybe it resonates with you as well, Tim, with you never know who's going to land on your website and whose life you might change and what ripple effect that might have with just that interaction with your content. So I think that's really, really cool. So Tim, I think you'll like this question. So relatively new piece of the show, the success portfolio is really my attempt to look at what is the, you know, how do people invest in themselves with invest in quotes and build the foundation for their success? You know, investment portfolio is the compilation of investments that lay the foundation for financial goals. If you have a stock portfolio, that's, you know, there's dollar signs and there's different holdings in there. But if you were to say like your maybe soft skills, what soft skills or traits or habits make up your success portfolio that help you achieve the success you've had? Because I mean, you're a successful entrepreneur and a pharmacist that is doing a non-traditional thing by running this type of business.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I love how you frame that as well. And for me, it's been an evolution, but I feel like I finally have been able to solidify the habits and routines that I know to be most transformative. And I've always tinkered with morning routines. I've always tinkered with certain journals and tracking, but I feel like I've never really been able to put my arms fully around the system that's worked best for me. And perhaps that transition to entrepreneurship and some more time has allowed me to do that. But the foundational piece for me is that morning routine. So, you know, when things are humming, it's 5:40 to 8:30 is really protected time for me. As I look at, you know, I've got a pretty specific routine of, you know, I start with a walk, I do some gratitude journaling, I do devotional. Typically, I'll do a cardio workout in there as well. I usually will read a little bit in the morning. Ideally, I'm writing a few hundred words every day, as that's a skill I want to hone. And then I'll walk through a visualization affirmation activity in the morning. So that takes me the better part, you know, of 2.5-ish hours in the morning. And then throughout the day, I've got some things I've identified, whether it's meditation, making sure I'm spending at least 2 hours a day on kind of the one priority of that week or that season of the business, making sure that I'm kind of looking at my overall physical health. I've been journaling some of my food for more conscious types of eatings and patterns of behaviors, but identifying those things and tracking them. So I have this giant spreadsheet where every day I take about 5 minutes and I log whether or not I did those things. And I've got a pretty simple system that adds up to 100 points. And I kind of track that throughout the month. And, you know, I don't beat myself up over it, but that's what I'm looking at. Kind of, okay, next month, what can I do to be a little bit better? Because I know if those things are happening, I'm in the right frame of mindset in terms of running the business, but also bringing the best that I can in my marriage, as well as obviously parenting my four boys. So those are the things, the routines. And for me, it all starts with that morning time. If that doesn't happen, you know, typically I find myself kind of in a rut for the better part of the day.
Yeah. It's like the Tony Robbins morning routine. It makes me think of that. Yeah. Just the concept. And if you read enough successful people, you know, biographies and whatnot, I feel like that's a really common thread, having that morning theme, or, you know, the visualization and gratitude. I think all those pieces really resonate with a lot of things that I've heard other entrepreneurs say. So I think if you missed what Tim just said, I would rewind and listen back, because I really think that that last piece was gold right there.
Yeah. And one thing I'll just add for a more tangible example, because I've always struggled with kind of that affirmation visualization piece. And I finally, it took me a while to get comfortable with it, but I had been working on kind of a written affirmation of like, okay, these are the things I'm thankful for. These are the visions I have for 1 year. These are the visions I have for 10 years from now. And I kept writing that, working on it. Once I flushed it out, I actually recorded it. And so I play that back to myself every day. And it was uncomfortable the first, you know, time or two, but just hearing the repetition. I mean, there's certain truths and things that I need to hear every single day, whether things are going well, you know, personally in the business, whether they're not going well. And that repetition, you know, and that's really the power of affirmations and visualization. Those things really start to, I think, seep in your subconscious and really start to be present on your mind throughout the day, and obviously over the course of time as well. So that would be one strategy if folks are kind of interested. How do I bring that piece to life that I have really, really found to be transformative?
Yeah, no, I think that's really good. I think that's a really good piece for anybody to really build into their daily routine would be, you know, maybe making a spreadsheet like that and just tracking your progress. Because I think it's helpful to see what you've done without being too hard on yourself. I appreciate you saying that as well, because if you don't check off everything on your list, it doesn't mean you failed. You did more than zero, you know, maybe, or maybe you had an off day, and that happens as well. Mm-hmm. So I think those are all very actionable tips, Tim. And I have one more kind of fun question, more tailored towards pharmacy for you, and then we'll say goodbye here. But what is a myth that you think the general public has about pharmacy that you'd like to debunk right now on the podcast?
What is a myth that the public has about, you know, pharmacy?
Yeah, pharmacist, pharmacy student, you know, anything kind of regarding the profession itself. You can kind of take that however you see fit, but what is something where you want to get on a mountain and just shout to people that this is not true?
Yeah, I think I'll pick on the financial piece for a moment just because that's what we do every day. But I think there's a general perception, not only externally, but internally, that like, hey, pharmacists, you know, they make great money. And so everything's going to be okay. And, you know, I think we know personally, you know, from lifestyle creep. And obviously, one of the challenges we face in our profession is that for many pharmacists, not all, but for many pharmacists, you know, they make a great income out of the gates. But relatively speaking, you know, that can be pretty flat and sometimes go in the wrong direction. We factor in inflation, especially in a period like we're in right now. And so I think we've really got to debunk that perception. And when I say externally, I'm not really talking about patients per se, but I'm talking about, you know, I had this feeling when I was in pharmacy school and it was well-intended by people around me. But there was that, you know, perception and rhetoric around like, hey, you're going to be a doctor and you're going to get your white coat and, you know, you're going to make a great income. And all of that is true, but we've got to check that perspective and make sure that that's not the finish line for us, but that we're also challenging ourselves to grow beyond that. And even when we are making a great income and those things are true, we still got hard work to do.
Exactly. Wonderfully stated. Well, Tim Olbrich, thank you so much for being a guest on the Eric Mueller Show today. Really appreciate your time and we'll look forward to continuing to follow your journey. How can someone best contact you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And folks, probably the easiest way to connect with me would be on LinkedIn. Tim Olbrich, you can also head on over to yourfinancialpharmacist.com. So thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Take care.